Oh, my lands, here we are with another show, another episode, and I am Jay Connor, the Private Money Authority. Just in case you've never tuned in before, we're so excited. We're getting ready to launch our fifth year of the podcast, and we're so glad you have decided to join us. If you've been tuning into the show, you know I have amazing guests that join me here on the show, and today is no exception. My guest today actually is a serial entrepreneur, he's an author, and my lands, I made a D at Wake Forest University in economy. My guest is an economist and knows what he's talking about. Well, he's got a focus on real estate and finance. He's actively involved in lots of aspects of commercial properties, apartments, commercial lending, insurance, property ownership, property management. And he's a regular contributor to some of the big print and broadcast media that you've heard of. He's an author also of the book titled Commercial Real Estate Investing, Understanding, Finding, and Funding Deals. That's my favorite topic right there, funding deals in today's world. And he has also been a guest on an episode of The Viewpoint, wow, with Dennis Quaid. So my guest and my friend, welcome to the show, Mr. Jake Clockton. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you on, Jake. And tell everybody where you are hailing from here in the United States.
Oh, I'm in Chicago.
In Chicago. One of my best friends is in Chicago. Did you grow up in Chicago?
I did. And I grew up in Rochester, New York, actually. And I moved around a little bit after I went to school in Buffalo, and then I did like accounting at a resort in Florida. And then I moved to Chicago to trade futures. And I used to trade like 3-month LIBOR and treasuries and Fed fund futures, stuff like that.
Yeah. Now I know why I made a D in economics at Wake Forest. You're doing that kind of stuff. Cool. Well, I mean, you've got all kinds of ventures going on, Jake. You've got Clopton Capital. You've got Clopton Insurance Services. You're also an investor in mobile apartment communities. You and I were talking a bit ago, and I think you got 3 apartment buildings, just yourself. So I'd like to hear an overview of each one of these worlds, and then we'll drill down into the real estate part of it. First of all, give me an overview of Clopton Capital, what that is and what it does.
Sure. Simply enough, we find capital for owners and operators of commercial real estate, all over the place. I started this company back in 2008-09-ish era, right? So like I said before, I used to trade 3-month LIBOR and Fed fund, futures, stuff like that. And, 2008-09 era is the financial crisis, right? And so interest rates went to 0. So hard to make money trading when, nothing's moving around. So, and at the time, right, it was a financial crisis. So my idea was to help people find capital, right? That, because apparently nobody was lending. So that's really what I did. I stopped trading, and I didn't really know what this business was yet, as far as like being an intermediary and a broker. But I just started making phone calls and calling around to lenders and funding sources and finding out who was still lending and who had money to lend and what they were doing it on. And then, people, you'd go out there and kind of say that you had capital sources and people just came to you, right? Because nobody could find money for loans and lending. At first we were doing a lot of different types of stuff, but then very quickly, focus into real estate and commercial real estate, which is what I'm really interested in, right? And so as the time went on, just really kind of specializing myself in commercial real estate, that's how I ended up, with our, our own personal portfolio, because it's what I understand and it's what I'm good at. And, so we kind of started to build that up. I like to keep our own personal portfolio to a good size compared to everything else we have going on, because, I operate a lot of businesses that are outside of just real estate investments. So I want to control my risk in the right way. So I don't want to get too over leveraged in one category. But that's kind of where the apartment building investments come from. And then, the property insurance stuff really, really just makes sense, right? So after, I think we started that last year, after 14 years of doing commercial real estate and building that network and those contacts, started to look at other ways that we could, kind of go into this universe and help out and monetize, some of what we have going on. And as I'm sure everybody that's listening knows, insurance costs are just going through the roof. So we started a whole agency that's nationwide to try to, to help that aspect out as well, that piggybacks off of the finance company. So that's how those three worlds kind of fit together and came to be.
Yeah. So your passion, that which you're really excited about, is commercial real estate investing, right?
Yep. That's really our focus, is on the commercial side, And if you could put a number to it, I'd say it's really deals probably $2 million and northward from there.
Right. You're talking about on a project or a property or whatever.
Right. Effectively. Right. So whether it's an apartment building by itself or a portfolio of single family homes or whatever it is. Right. So somewhere around that value in north.
Gotcha. So, people can get into real estate in all kinds of categories and all kinds of ways. I mean, you talk real estate and there's self-storage, there's land, there's singles family, there's all kinds of commercial, et cetera, et cetera. So out of all the choices that you have of being in real estate, why commercial?
It's a good question. I really just kind of gravitated towards that side of the industry. But I think as time is, going forward in kind of that, the residential side to me is becoming more investment, right? 20% of all homes sold to investors now. I think there's starting to become a gray area between what's, commercial and residential and what's not, right? At this point, a lot of the residential stuff is becoming commercial, right? So it really just in the beginning, it just sort of gravitated towards, but again, it's starting to creep down into that residential space as it is.
So. Right. So you've got three different apartment building complexes. Tell me, what is it that you look for? What's your criteria of a good deal to buy? So first, let me just clarify. Are you interested in buying existing apartment complexes or building them?
Yeah. So we bought, I bought personally, right? These communities with the set of criteria that I kind of came up with on my own, right? And so I don't look at these pieces of real estate as investments. Really look at them as operating businesses, right? Because that's really what it is, right? At the end of the day, there's a good way to run it and there's a bad way to run it, right? So there really is a huge business aspect of it. And then I looked at it like a product, right? And then what type of environment did I want my product in? And to have good demand generators located around it, easy access of transportation, stuff like that. So, the properties that are fit for me personally were buildings that had a little bit of meat on the bone as far as being able to fix them up and go in. Not dilapidated by any chance, but, the ones that we bought kind of had old, outdated, mechanicals, right? So old boiler, stuff like that. And then we used, some of the state and local municipality grant programs to go in and fix all that stuff basically for free, energy efficiency. And we were able to get, good marks off the acquisition prices because there was old, mechanicals. As far as demand generators, right, I'd like to see stuff very close to schools. some sort of mass transportation right outside. So in Chicago, that's, you know, the L, the Metro line, or, you know, a bus stop right outside, right? I mean, so, you know, I wasn't extremely worried about, like, you know, oh my God, there's got to be some huge company next door, or, you know, for, like, you know, employment. But really the transportation was our way of, like, you know, saying, like, hey, people have access to employment. And then, you know, just generally speaking, like, investments that are around schools tend to do pretty well and have much less crime than anywhere else in the area. Because, you know, for in Chicago, for instance, you know, I think it's if you get arrested near a school, like, your sentence is immediately double compared to anywhere else. Right. So the buildings that we have, I would say we bought them at great cap rates, and they're in, like, you know, lower income areas, maybe like low middle class, something like that. But because of the way we bought them, you know, they're very, very low crime rate. And all the tenants that are in our buildings are all, none of them are Section 8. They're all market rate and families with people with jobs and stuff like that. And it kind of goes into, like, how we, what I looked for and how I bought them, right? Being near schools and lots of transportation.
What are some of the biggest mistakes you've made, lessons learned from investing in apartments? And if you knew then what you know now, you would have done it differently.
Well, there's always a learning curve. One of the most, so there was two things that happened at one of the buildings that ended up costing us a really good amount of money. I'm still looking back, and I'm not totally sure how to completely mitigate these, but one building we purchased, the city ended up doing some work outside the building, and they did work on a water main outside the building, right? And it did something to our property where, you know, they were just letting water pour out into the street, and we ended up getting a $16,000 water bill one month. And
my land, that's a lot of water.
That's a lot, yeah. I guess the lesson learned is, one, that could happen. And we fought them pretty hard on it, but if you're in Chicago, you know that's impossible. I guess lesson learned would be, like, knowing in the future, if that does happen, to really get out in front of it and, you know, to pay attention. Because realistically, I was kind of like, oh, the city's doing work outside on a water main. Great, whatever. So I'm not totally sure what happened if they were, you know, at the time we had these old Sloan valve toilets, which were like prison toilets basically in there. That's what the building came with. And I believe maybe shutting the water main off, reset them, and then you've got, you know, 30 toilets that are all running, and that can cause a huge water. So anyway, so to really paying attention to that and making sure that you could somehow mitigate that and that doesn't happen again, that would be a good learning curve, right? So any sort of construction around your building and how that's going to affect you in ways that you don't foresee would definitely be a good learning curve. The second thing that happened at that building, this is I'm sure a lot of landlords have this type of story. We had a disgruntled tenant that was unhappy about her neighbors upstairs having a child that was bouncing a ball on the floor, and she decided to apparently because of this call the city and complain, and had the inspector come in and complain to him, and, you know, they wrote us up for like 30 things, like torn carpet, you know what I mean? It's ridiculously small things, but it still cost us something like $15,000 to fix everything, you know what I mean? Which, you know, I mean, I don't know if I could have anticipated that happening. You know, sometimes you just get people that are angry. But, you know, maybe now going in the future, whenever we have somebody that seems to be pretty volatile, we try to get in front of that before, you know, they start calling people in. And the buildings are in great shape. But as you know, if you get a city inspector in there, he's got to find something because he didn't come there for nothing. So.
That's right. That's right. Jake, I think you'll agree with me that, well, I don't know. We'll see if you agree with me or not. There's no way I would have ever guessed what has happened with the real estate market over the past couple of years, ever since COVID started. I would have never guessed what real estate prices have done since COVID. I'm here in a really, really small town in Eastern North Carolina. I mean, our total target market where we invest in real estate has only got, 50,000 people or so. And I mean, like, I bought a single family house a year and a half ago. At the time, the value was $275,000, and today it's $405,000, that kind of thing. So I never could have seen that coming. So I say that to ask you this. What is your take on the current state of the real estate market? Where do you see it going? What's your crystal ball telling you?
So good question. Okay. So I've seen a lot of people compare what's happening right now to the 2008-09 era. But I think there's some serious differences.
No, big differences.
So back, and I'll just compare the two, right? So back in that era, banks obviously were taking a lot more risk and the underwriting for loans was not good and all this stuff, right? So, I mean, the big problem was you had, rating agencies rating things as risk-free when they were anything but risk-free, right? And so what really caused that was like very fast asset deflation, right? And so what the Fed stepped in and they started buying up all this stuff and they propped up assets and they propped up bank balance sheets again. And that's what we did again during COVID. And then, during COVID, you'd have all these demographic changes, right? Because everybody left cities and you have supply chain constraints and all that stuff. And, now you have more family formation. So single family home prices and work from home, right? So single family home prices have obviously gone up for many reasons. and going back to something, I touched on earlier, you have a structural change going on in the residential marketplace, whereas now almost 20% of all homes sold are sold to investors and not actual owner users of real estate, right? And so what's happened a lot is home buyers are getting pushed out. And you can go on the internet and read this anywhere, right? I mean, home buyers have been pushed out left and right. And if you look at rent inflation, most of the rent inflation is actually happening in the single family home rental space, not actually multifamily. Multifamily is going up too, but not nearly as high as, rents for single family homes are. So, the third thing that's happening here with the buyers of homes is, and you can see this too, is single family homes are at their, least affordable spot since, now that rates have gone up. And typically in a market like that, when home affordability would get very low, you would start to see prices kind of coming down, but we're not actually seeing that. What you're actually seeing is transaction volume come down. Because you're kind of getting this weird feedback mechanism, right? Where, homeowners, which are your clients, right? For rental properties, they're getting pushed out of the home ownership category for two reasons. There's less supply, right? Because you've got all these investors coming to the market, right? So they're taking stuff up. It's also hard to build because of all the supply chain constraints. And then interest rates have gone up substantially, so they can afford less house anyways. So that pushes them all into the rental market, right? And then as rents continue to, as there's more competition for rents, those single family home rents will continue to go up. And so investors will want to buy single family homes more because rents are continuing to go up, right? So you get that weird feedback mechanism where it's like, the rents are going up because investors are buying homes and then investors are buying homes because the rents are going up, right? So that might continue for a little while here until maybe you get more supply into the market or something like that. But I don't really see home prices coming down, right? And so what we've seen recently is as mortgage rates have risen and homes became less affordable, the transaction volumes were down, but the prices are not coming down. The prices are actually still going up, right? And investors are still buying just as many homes. Because think about it, investors are a different kind of type of animal. They can come and they can buy it all cash, refinance it later. They're used to higher rates because these are commercial deals, right? And also, you know, we're buying it based for different criteria. You know, investors are buying homes for cash flow and they look at cap rates and stuff like that, right? I mean, if you look around, you know, the country and you compare home prices to, you know, whatever the current rent is in that market, and then you start to look around at like what some of the cap rates are for like multifamily area, and you normalize those prices to like four caps, maybe four and a half, five caps, whatever, for a single family home, you can see, and I don't know if they're going to get down that far, but you know, if you start to aggregate single family home portfolios, you can actually get very low cap rates. And if you look at it on that basis, I think you've got a, you know, probably in almost every market in the US, I mean, a good runway for prices to continue to accelerate, because that, you know, your typical home buyer is not buying it based on that, right? They're buying it based on how much can I afford based on my salary. Whereas the new guys, everybody else is coming in, and now there's institutional players in here too, right? You know, is that, you know, they're buying it based on different valuation criteria that I think can continue to push home prices higher. So I don't think there's going to be a housing crisis at whatsoever. I don't think there's even going to be that big of a recession, right? Because you've got the Fed raising interest rates because they're trying to take liquidity out of the system, right? But we've created so much liquidity. And something that a lot of people aren't paying attention to is there is $2 trillion in cash parked in the overnight repo markets that's just sitting there. That's not being used up, right? So that's basically excess liquidity that banks have that they don't have anywhere to put. And that just gets put in the overnight repo markets at earning nothing. So that all the $2 trillion of cash can still come back into this marketplace at any time, you know, to prop up stocks, bonds, real estate, lent out, what have you. So, I mean, I think people are talking about we're going to have a big recession, all that. I think, you know, inflation will normalize faster than people think. I mean, as long as we don't have World War III, whatever. I mean, then you got bigger things to worry about. But, you know, and as soon as you start to get some stability and take some risk and uncertainty off the table, I think it'll be a fast correction to the upside in a lot of different assets.
I've got a two-part question. First part is, do you see, of course, we're as of today on this show, we're walking into the summer of 2022 right now. Do you see real estate, and I'm talking single family houses for this question, do you see single family house prices continuing to rise this year through the end of 2022? Do you have any opinion on 2023? At what time do you see them start, those prices starting to stabilize? And the other part of the next question is, do you see interest rates stabilizing anytime soon? I'm talking mortgage rates, or do you see those continuing to rise in 2022?
So it's hard to put an exact timeline on it. But I think as long as single family home rental rates are continuing to rise, then I think single family home prices will stay propped up and probably go up. So I think that's what one of the major drivers is in this residential market, is the rental rates for single family homes. And I don't see that coming down anytime soon. So I would say if you're looking for when's the top, you know, and when is home price, you know, when are home prices going to, you know, stop accelerating, I would watch the rental rates and their acceleration. When that starts to cool off, then you're going to start to see home prices start to, you know, stop accelerating. If rents start to come down, the opposite effect, right? I think you're going to start to see prices come back in. So I think that's really what's propping up a lot of the single family home values.
And before you get to the interest rates, let me drill down for a second on what you just said. So how is it that rental rates affect the prices of homes as far as whether somebody's going to rent or they're going to buy or driving up prices of homes? What's the correlation between rental rates and purchasing residential houses?
Because investors are such a large part of the residential market right now that, you know, and they're buying off cash flow. So if you consider that, you know, there's a strike price for any investor's cash flow, if you keep moving that needle of rental rates upward, they're going to be willing to pay more for that house. That's what I think is driving it, right? Because investors are such a large piece of the pie. And I think we're going to get news out about this summer. And I think early this year, I was getting intel that they're like 20, that investors are 20% of all homes sold. I think this summer, that's going to creep a lot higher because you've had home buyers that are priced out, and not only home prices, but, you know, affordability of getting loans. And but investors are still buying left and right. You can look anywhere, Facebook groups, whatever, LinkedIn, people are out there buying houses.
For sure.
Yeah. As far as rates and mortgage rates, what I think is going to happen is, you know, the Fed's going to raise the Fed funds rate, right? But the Fed funds rate is tied to very short-term interest rates. It's a 30-day interest rate. So short-term rates will certainly go up. And certain loan products are tied to short-term rates, like construction loans, bridge loans, right? So a lot of your guys out there that are doing fix and flip, stuff like that, yeah, you'll see your fix and flip money, depends on who your lender is, right? Probably go higher in rate. Long-term interest rates are tied to different types of things, right? Like economic growth and inflation, right? So I think about long-term interest rates being the 10-year treasury or 30-year mortgage rates, stuff like that, right? And what's going to happen on that end of the curve, and you've already seen this happen a little bit, right? You saw the 10-year come down from 3.2 to now 2.78 somewhere today. And as the Fed raises short-term rates to put the brakes on the economy, you know, that'll take out growth and it'll take out inflation. And so those long-term rates will come down. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to end up with a very flat yield curve where, you know, and a lot of people have heard about, you know, yield curve inversion and flat yield curves, all this stuff. I think we're just going to end up with a very flat yield curve where the short-term rates are basically in line with long-term rates. I don't think long-term rates are going to explode. A lot of people are getting very high mortgage rates right now. But what's going on with that is that there, because of what the Fed's doing, the high yield debt bond markets and these mortgage buyers have really taken a step back. And so credit spreads have gone way out, right? And so the way you get your mortgage rate is you take the index, which is the treasury or the swap, and then add the credit spread. And then so once things start to settle down, and I think people get more certainty about how many hikes the Fed is going to do, and, you know, maybe take some risk out of somewhere, right? Supply chain starts to alleviate, or some inflation prints come down. I think those credit spreads will start to narrow, and then, you know, mortgage rates will actually, long-term mortgage rates, like 30-year mortgage rates, stuff like that, will really start to come in.
Awesome. Well, I like your crystal ball, Jake, a lot better than some of my other guests. So, and you actually can justify it. You can justify it with facts.
We shall see. I mean, the thing about interest rates is they're very, you know, I should trade rates, right? It's very hard to predict what's going to happen, because I can tell you based on what's happening right now where it might go, but it could be completely different by tomorrow.
That's right. Well, Jake, I know people want to continue the conversation with you. So what's the best way for folks to continue the conversation and be in touch with you and your team? I know you got funding for commercial deals and that type of thing. So please share that.
Yeah. Our website, claptoncapital.com. There it is. Call me directly anytime, or I'm exceptionally easy to find on LinkedIn, and, you know, any way you want to connect, we're always around.
That's awesome. So if you are listening, My guest name again is Jake, J-A-K-E, Clopton, C-L-O-P-T-O-N, and his website is www.cloptoncapital, that's C-L-O-P-T-O-N, capital.com. Jake, thank you so much for joining me here on the show today. Parting comments.
Thanks, Jay. Listen, I appreciate you having me on. If anybody wants to get in touch, love to chat about deals or just where the market is in general. Again, there's our contact info. So yeah, looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Jake. God bless you. Catch you later.
Thank you.
There you have it, folks. Another episode, another show of the podcast. Great having you on. I really appreciate you subscribing, rating, and reviewing. And if you're watching YouTube, be sure and tap that bell so you don't miss out on any future episodes and amazing guests, just like I've had today. I'm Jay Conner, the Private Money Authority, wishing you all the best. Here's to taking your business to the next level. And we'll see you right here on the next show. Thank you.